In the 1960s, Stax Records in Memphis was the center of Southern soul music, the crucible for artists like Otis Redding and Isaac Hayes and Booker T. Jones, and the singer and songwriter William Bell. Bell signed with Stax in 1961, when he was just 22 years old.
In the beginning, you really loved me.
His first single put him on the map not just for his voice, but for his songwriting as well. You Don't Miss Your Water was subsequently covered by Taj Mahal, Otis Redding, and the Byrds. Cream and Albert King and Billy Idol have done versions of other William Bell songs. And he has just made his own first album with Stax in more than 40 years.
Last night I had a dream, and there were three of me. There was the man I was, the man I am, and the man I want to be.
He wrote and recorded the new record, This Is Where I Live, with his producer John Leventhal. On paper, the two of them seem like a bit of a musical odd couple. Leventhal's best known for his work with country-leaning artists like his wife Roseanne Cash and Sean Colvin. But having now listened to this record a few times, it seems to me they make a kind of perfect team. And I have them both with me here today. William Bell, John Leventhal, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you,
Kurt. Great to be here.
Almost all of the songs, all but two of the songs on this album are new by you guys and your collaborators. There's a cover of Jesse Winchester's All Your Stories. And there is a new version of the song that William Bell is famousest for, Born Under a Bad Sign. That was the first recording by Albert King in 1967. Then this version, which is, I think, probably the first one I ever heard when I was 13 years old, by Cream.
Born under a bad sign. I've been down since I began to crawl. It wasn't a bad love.
And John Leventhal is here doing a Ginger Baker impersonation.
Yes, still love that drum beat a lot.
But William, you never recorded it yourself until now, and this is the version from the new album.
Born under a bad sign. I've been down since I began to crawl. Oh, if it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all.
Now, was there something that the other famous versions of our youth didn't do that you wanted to do differently, get it right? Why'd you decide to do it?
No, it's not that they did it wrong. John had an idea. He said, let's cut Born Under a Bad Sign. And at first I'm saying, well, that's been done so many times and so iconic and everything. And he said, but I've got an idea that we would do it totally different. And when he first handed me the track, it's like, okay, I don't hear the iconic bass line.
Yeah.
And so I looked at him and I said, what? And so he said, just try it. Just go ahead and sing it like you would ordinarily sing it.
He sang the hell out of it. One take. I played him the track. He wasn't so sure about it. And then he sang what you heard. You know, I could probably take up too much of your precious time, Kurt, telling you like my thoughts about Born Under a Bad Sign, but I'll try to be quick. One is, you know that William co-wrote it. I know that William co-wrote it, but you'd be surprised at how many people do not know that. In some ways, that song is so incredible and so timeless that people almost put it in the bag of a blues song that's quote unquote always been there.
Right. Nobody wrote it.
Right. It, it, yeah. ha, it ha, you know, and to Matt, to me, that is one of the most incredible things for a songwriter to done, right. to have done. He's written a classic song. People will be playing that song 100 years from now, 200 years from now. They will. It's an extraordinary song melodically. The guitar line, original guitar line, is great, and the lyric is phenomenal.
So what did you want to do different?
I just knew there was no point in competing, particularly with those two versions you played, because they're so iconographic and wonderful. I love both of them. And the slight little liberating insight I had was, well, we don't necessarily have to use that lick that much. And then I just really listened to the lyrics, and the lyrics to me have come an ominous thing to it, and
yes.
the kind of voodoo thing to it of like a – there's that underpinning of the swamp and voodoo and a kind of ominous sensibility, and I was just playing guitar, and I just found that one simple guitar riff. And the thought crossed my mind. It's like, this, we could base this melody on this riff.
Yeah.
And there's a little reference, just a slight
right.
reference to the iconic guitar
right.
lick.
Yeah.
In the Albert King?
Yeah.
We put it in there one time. I had to put
right.
it in once. Otherwise, it wasn't really
So you are a deconstructing postmodernist.
That's See, I knew you were going to do that. I knew you were going to hit it. No, man, I'm not. That's, to me, it's still real music arranged
in
a real way that cats can play.
I'm just joshing. William, you were born and raised in Memphis, and of course Stax was in Memphis and was the place that Southern soul was born and made. At the time in the 60s when you were at Stax doing that, did it feel like, oh, we're doing one kind of soul, and up in Detroit at Motown they're doing a different kind of soul?
Actually, we didn't think about it that much. We knew that Motown was doing a version, but it was always polished for mid-America, you know. And we were grassroots, right out of church,
yeah.
right out of the cotton field thing, and
yeah.
and for the common blue-collar worker, you know. And so that's what we did, and we knew that what we were doing felt good.
Uh-huh.
And it was honest. And so that's what we did, and that's the approach that we took. We just did that.
So you thought it was better and more authentic.
Hey. Well, not necessarily, but we thought that this was like how the common person would look at this
uh-huh.
and sing along with it.
Right.
And like I said, most of us right out of church, so you had a gospel influence there. And in Memphis, you had country and western, blues, jazz,
right.
and all that mixed into one. So
right.
we were like a product of our environment.
Well, so having these country musicians, country-ish musicians on this record, I guess makes sense then. I mean,
oh, yeah. It
know.
Makes perfect. It's not that much different from blues and country.
Right.
You know, when you dissect it, it's all the elements are the
right.
same.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, we often talk about the nexus of blues and country sort of is soul music in a lot of ways.
Uh-huh. You know? Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
The other thing that we should mention is like it's, you know, Stax, it was a neighborhood thing. Like these, like Booker and William went to high school together,
yeah,
very
Al
close
Jackson.
To where the Stax studios
right.
were. It's a small town,
right.
and all these guys came up in this neighborhood. Sort of similarly to what happened in Detroit. A lot of those original musicians just grew up near where the studio actually was.
And when you talk about the similarity between – or the intersection, interstices of blues and country, that's what? Telling sad stories? Feeling the tragedy of everyday life? What?
Songs about life, lost loves, loves that gained, and hard times. Song about life.
Rural? Is it part of the rural thing as well?
I do, and I think it's this mighty, powerful collision of basically Africa and the British Isles at the same time, where it's like you have these two unbelievably strong traditions of the African tradition, which first fruition is kind of like New Orleans jazz and blues and the Delta, et cetera, and this other Appalachian ballad tradition that has a certain sense of harmony, a certain sense of storytelling. And, you know, Memphis is like – they collide in Memphis.
Yes.
You know, think about what's going on in Memphis in this unbelievable 10-year period. You got Elvis, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis. You have Booker T and the MGs, William
yep.
Bell,
yep.
Sam and Dave, Otis Redding. It's unbelievable. Al Green. It's
yeah.
off the charts.
And it's not Nashville.
No,
it's not. In a very distinct way.
Yeah, yeah. It's not. It's kind of a wild, eccentric town, not a corporate town.
Yeah.
In fact, when it's forced to corporatize – it sort of disappears.
And I guess you were coming up just before the big civil rights thing, so maybe the racial tension wasn't yet acute. Maybe.
Well, it was just as acute. I mean, it was in Memphis from the time my first inkling of it was when I was about 12 years old.
Right.
And so it was very
You felt
present.
It. Yeah.
Presence was there. That's why Stax was so phenomenal, because
it was like a weird utopian island.
Yeah,
right?
It's like an oasis in the middle of a desert. Yeah. I mean, you got inside the walls of Stax and you didn't care about color, race, or whatever, just whatever you brought to the table in terms of creativity or talent. And but the minute you walked out of the door,
you're back in the real world.
Yeah.
There's a song in this record called I Will Take Care of You, and I want to play it. And you can just kind of walk us through it as we listen to it.
I will take care of you. Oh, yes, I will.
Well, a friend of mine, low, sick, and was having some hard times, and sometimes as you age and all your friends die out around you and your family dies out, sometimes you feel really alone, and that's what this is about. I've got your back. I'll take care of you. Don't worry about it.
Well, now I'm going to choke up when I listen to it again. I just thought it was about, like, you know, your wife or something.
Well, it's a good friend.
Yeah.
At the end, in the darkest night, just keep the faith, don't lose the light. I'll be there to make things right. I will be there.
William, old soul songs by you and Otis Redding and James Brown and Benny King are sampled all the time these days by hip-hop artists. For instance, your song, here it is, I Forgot to Be Your Lover, has been sampled a lot. And now here it is, sampled pretty liberally by Ludacris.
One go with your initial. Harris, photos, group shots, can you remember? Bury him, tell this bitch, go to the
front. Is sampling as a thing all fine by you?
It is by me. It isn't by a lot of
I know
creators and writers, but it is by me because it's a form of flattery to me. I mean, if somebody can relate to something that I've created 40 or 50 years ago and they can relate to it enough to want to record it or sample some parts of it and use it in one, that's to me is great.
Yeah.
Because that means whatever that I've created had some kind of substance that lasted, yeah.
Did they pay you fairly?
Oh, yeah. I get paid.
Good. Are you going to make more records?
Of course. John and I were talking about that the other night. Said, yeah, we got to do at least a few more projects together.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. It has been a pleasure. William Bell, John Leventhal, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Kurt.
William Bell's new album, This Is Where I Live, comes out on June 3rd.
Don't you remember all the things that you said that cut like a knife you left while I bled? And now you come calling when you're so upset. But all the things you can't remember, I'm still trying to forget.